Welcome to the Big Three podcast. This podcast answers three big questions raised from Sunday's sermon by the congregation of Guymere Baptist. The Big Three Pod seeks to discuss these questions, explore issues, unpack theology, provide further information and explanation to help your faith grow. You can listen to the original sermon on your favourite podcast platform or at guymerebaptist.org.au. Our prayer is that this pod helps you as you follow Jesus.
Well, welcome to the Big Three. It's great to have you with me again. My name is Mark Rader. I'm the senior pastor here at Guymere Baptist Church and your host for the next half hour or so as we do indeed unpack three big questions. Our sermon series is Lives Changed by Jesus, and we're looking at a series of practices that are evidence from a kind of a biblical perspective of lives that are changed by Jesus. And as I mentioned on Sunday, I think there are also ways in which there are practices, I think, that Jesus uses to change us. So they kind of work a little bit like the, you know, the whole chicken and the egg. I'm not sure exactly which comes first. You know, are we changed so that we can begin to do these practices fully, or do we use these practices to become people who are changed? I think Jesus uses them, and I think they are evidence of a life change. And the topic or the practice we were looking at on Sunday was financial generosity. Generosity kind of in the broadest sense, but financial generosity in particular. I reflected on Psalm 112, a companion to Psalm 111, which really draws attention to the fact that the generous person is very, in acting generously, is acting like God. Psalm 111 and Psalm 112 are not, they're companions in kind of more ways than just thematically. They're linked in all sorts of different ways. And they draw this parallel. So there's almost a caricature of the righteous person as a generous person. And I talked a little bit about how it was that Jesus uses financial generosity to change us. You can listen to that sermon as you heard in the intro on our sermon podcast platforms or on YouTube. But there were some questions that were asked, which were great questions to engage with. The three that we're going to be looking at today are these. How do the teenagers of GBC take up the invitation to be financially generous when they don't have any money? Which is a really good question. I'm going to expand that out a little bit to anyone who finds themselves with irregular income patterns, if I can put it that way. Perhaps they work a couple part-time jobs. They're uncertain about the shifts that they're going to get. And it kind of links with a fourth question that was asked that asked the question, do we take account of the economic situation? So while I'm not going to answer that fourth question, I will kind of try to reflect a bit on that in talking about how teenagers or others with irregular income patterns can be engaged in that way. Secondly, what are your thoughts on the righteous who come to ruin? For example, those who are generous even when times are tough, and yet they end up destitute or in difficulty. And it's an excellent theological question. You know, I talked on Sunday about Psalm 112 kind of providing us with a caricature, so to speak, you know, drawing attention to one key attribute or feature and exaggerating it, shall we say, for emphasis. And I think that the question of suffering then does lurk pretty close to the surface behind those caricatures. And it's an excellent question to engage with. And then finally, where does tithing fit in with financial generosity? So those are the questions that we're going to grapple with. I'm really excited to get stuck into them. So why don't we do that? So I don't know if the first question was asked by a teenager or not. I hope that it was. But one way or the other, it's an excellent question to ask. How do teenagers of GBC take up the invitation to be financially generous when they don't have any money? And I do think that there are others who would fall into that category. I think there'd be some uni students who would fall into that category. There'd be shift workers, perhaps, or those who are dependent on part-time work. Who are just uncertain week by week or fortnight by fortnight or month by month about how much they might receive in terms of number of shifts and all that sort of stuff. And for whom the general costs of living, not even taking into account the current cost of living crisis, just, you know, the things that you need to do, kind of take up a chunk of and sometimes a certain percentage of your income. meaning that you've got varying amounts, kind of, shall I say, left over. And so I'll offer a few thoughts on this. Kind of like what we did with Glenn Smith, our treasurer, when we interviewed him, which was, I thought, very helpful. The principles that he suggested, you know, I kind of introduced them as saying they're not the principles. They're not the right principles. They're just some principles to start thinking through. So things I'm going to chat about are kind of fall into that same category. I hope they help people engage with this a little bit. One of the best pieces of advice that I've ever heard on financial giving, particularly for those who are young, is to begin early, like to start early. I'll talk about tithing a little bit later on, but when I was young, my parents encouraged me to tithe from whatever I received. So if I got a little bit of money for, you know, cutting lawns or babysitting, you know, they just encouraged me to give a little bit of that in the offering the next week. And so that was something that I did more or less regularly as a young person, which meant that I was simply kind of, I was trying to give out of what I received, whatever that might be. Now, I was a kid, I didn't have, there was no cost of living apart from having to buy hockey cards. So, you know, like, and that was probably discretionary when it came right down to it. So, you know, there wasn't a lot for me to spend my money on, which was good because I didn't have a lot of money. But that practice of just giving something from whatever I received, and this is where that really good piece of advice comes in, to give first. If you wait to the end of the month or the end of the paycheck or the end of the, you know, whatever it is, then there inevitably won't be enough money left. To start by saying, I'm going to give a certain amount, whatever it might be. And again, I'll talk about tithing a little bit later on. I kind of have mixed emotions about tithing, but there's something about, you know, setting aside 10% or whatever it is, whatever you decide in your heart to give, as Paul says. But to do that kind of early in the piece, I think that's really, really helpful. I think it's also really helpful to remember that it's the principle of the thing rather than the amount that indicates generosity. I think that there can be instances where, well, let me take an extreme example. Someone like a Bill Gates, who's now set up this foundation that's giving billions of dollars away every year. And at one level, you kind of go, that's really generous, but he's still a billionaire. Like, he's not really being all that generous when it comes right down to it, because none of what he does impacts his life particularly much. You follow me on this? So there's a sense that we can sometimes believe that it's only generous if it's big. And I think the question about generosity, and I'm not suggesting that what Bill Gates is doing is not a good thing. I think it is a good thing. However, right, we can sometimes be led to believe that it has to be really like a big deal. And then, you know, we get our pay slip and it's, you know, there's not a lot of money in it because I had two shifts at the cafe this week. And well, what do I do with that? You know, and so, you know, we end up giving, you know, $7.50 or something. And we think to ourselves, is that really what I'm called to? And I would say, yes, yes, you are. Because it's in the principles and the practices of setting some aside and giving some aside and being prepared to the best of our ability to do what we can to respond to the invitation of God. I would also say that for teenagers in particular, I would encourage teenagers to be thinking local. You know, their local church or their, you know, their like local charities or like people that they know who need help, right? Like, you can support your friends. You can help your friends with stuff. You can, you know, volunteer or give a little bit of money to like a local football club. Like, to some degree, what we're looking for, I think, from a life changed by Jesus is that willingness to set aside our self-sufficiency, to deepen our trust in God, to kind of be countercultural in terms of how we demonstrate love for those around us. And so thinking locally can be quite helpful because local is more likely to touch our heart. you know, Glenn talked a little bit about, you know, supporting, you know, he talked about supporting the church and supporting May Mission Month and then looking for other projects. And we weren't able to show all of that because it was just a little bit too long for the context of the service. But he had talked a little bit about kind of a heart response to things that for he and his wife, where their hearts were drawn was one of those places where they gave to. So starting locally, I think, could be quite beneficial in that space, because I think it engages our heart a little bit more, right? To make sure that we're giving to something that's meaningful to us, that just makes that a little bit easier to do. So those would be the things that I would suggest to anyone, really, with irregular income. You know, I think that, you know, making sure that we're setting aside some money, maybe it's not the same percentage every time because there are costs that we have, but to be giving something away in some way, and to do that right at the beginning, not to wait until the end, and to do that locally, to something that's meaningful to us. I think those are ways that we can begin to engage in financial generosity. And of course, that's also where I would encourage you to be thinking more broadly about generosity as a whole. And, you know, there's a generosity of time in terms of service and being engaged and being with people and those sorts of things. There's the generosity of what I might call of spirit, you know, our willingness to forgive and those sorts of things. But I think when we're talking about financial generosity, those three things in particular, I think would be a helpful place to start for teenagers, for young adults, uni students, those who have irregular income, for whom it's different every month and you're uncertain about how much money you'll have and all of those sorts of things. So I would encourage you in those spaces to be engaged in that way. I think that's a helpful way forward as we think about financial generosity. So Psalm 112, as I said at the outset, and as I talked about on Sunday, presents us with a bit of a caricature. And you've seen caricature artists at, I don't know, the Easter show or wherever it might be. That was the only example I could think of really where I'd seen them. But, you know, you see them and they draw a person and the ears are exaggerated or the hairstyle is exaggerated to kind of draw your attention to that feature. And in Psalm 112, it's this feature of generosity, that even in the midst of bad news and insecurity and fear, they're freely scattering their gifts to the poor, which is all wonderful, right? Because of the description of their blessing, right? That they're blessed, they're rich, they're wealthy, their kids are important, their legacy lasts forever. Like, it just kind of goes on and on, very stereotypical ways in terms of the blessing that we would expect from a generous person. But it does raise the question that was asked. What are your thoughts on the righteous who come to ruin, those who are generous even when times are tough, and yet they end up destitute or in difficulty? This is a question that lurks behind quite a bit of the wisdom literature. And Psalm 112 kind of does have that wisdom-y feel to it, right? It opens with, you know, hallelujah, blessed are those who fear the Lord, who delight in his commands. There's this sense that they're talking in wisdom terminology and idioms, right? A little bit of shorthand. And so what we find is what we would expect to find, that the generous person is blessed, as, you know, as I just said. But throughout wisdom literature, you know, most notably in the book of Job, there's the question of, you know, what this is the way of wisdom is a good rule of thumb, right? If you are honest, chances are it's going to turn out okay. But there are times when it doesn't, right? That famous proverb about, you know, raising a child in the way they should go, and when they're old, they will not depart from it. And it's not a promise. It's a good rule of thumb, right? I think we all know people who, you know, they've had a couple kids, they've raised them basically the same, and it doesn't always, shall we say, work out, right? That there are some times when, you know, kids have been raised in a particular way and they depart from that way when they become adults. That doesn't mean that the proverb's not true. It just means that it's a proverb. It's not a guaranteed ironclad promise. It's kind of that rule of thumb, which means that there are times when generosity, which is the principle, can lead to want in the life of the person who was generous. Right. There are times and places where, you know, the righteous become destitute. There are times when those who are following after God don't have it easy, right? Like there's, we all know these examples. We all know these stories. The question of suffering is a really kind of big apologetic topic, right? You know, like apologetics being defending the faith, right? So if God is good and if God is powerful, then why does he allow suffering? Right? That's the shortest form of the question that I know. But it's a really personal question about, you know, what do we what happens when things go wrong for us as followers of Jesus? And while, I mean, there's probably an entire big three episode or a year's worth of episodes just on that topic of suffering alone, I'd want to draw your attention to something that I spoke about. I think it was in my third point about the ways in which Jesus uses financial generosity to change us. And that was that it deepens our trust in God. And every so often when I'm preaching, this is my experience of it, I'll say things in particular ways in the middle of a sermon that I didn't actually kind of rehearse it exactly that way. But in the midst of it, I think, yes, that there's something in there that I think is precisely what I'm trying to say. It doesn't happen as often as I would like, but occasionally, and I think it happened on Sunday. So I talked a little bit about the fear that can blow through our souls around our finances. And it raises two big questions, one or it whispers two things in our ears, right? One is, you don't have enough. And secondly, you won't have enough. And that really causes us to close off our generosity. If I don't have enough and I'm not going to have enough, then why in the world would I be generous? But then I kind of finish that up by saying that the righteous, the upright, their answer to those fears is that God is enough. And ultimately, you know, whether you study Job or you look at the example of Jesus or other examples of grappling with the question of suffering, that's essentially the answer, that God is enough. God is enough. And that doesn't mean that we need to necessarily, you know, give everything away and essentially become homeless. I don't think that's the way of wisdom for us here. But it does invite us to say, God is enough. Like that's ultimately the response of the righteous, right? Who experience ruin, right? Those who go through hard times. The stance of righteousness there is to say, God is enough. God is enough for me. Which is a big place to, it's a big issue to grapple with, right? It's not an easy response, but it is the response of faith. And so I think that's ultimately what we want to be developing in our lives, this sense that God is enough. And that's where the patterns of financial generosity, for instance, that I talked a bit about in the first answer, I think are quite helpful for us. Because if we establish some patterns, you know, when we are young or at the beginning of our journey with Jesus, those patterns in very small ways reinforce our trust in God. You know, I mentioned, I think it was in the evening service, a little bit of a variation. But every time we give something away, even just a little bit, even if we just give a little bit of our money away, for instance, we are basically making a declaration that we have more than enough. We have more than enough. It might only be $10 more than enough, but we have more than enough. And I am able to give that away because I feel like I have more than enough. And so that practice of being financially generous really reminds us that we have more than enough and we have God and we are following after him. There's this sense then that we build a pattern that allows us in the hard times, hopefully, to be able to say, I trust in the Lord and he is enough. It was, you know, it was Job's response. Ultimately, everything is taken away and he's like, well, I'm not going to curse God now. Like he gives, he takes away, like he's enough. Psalm 73, that's the kind of the bottom line of the psalmist's reflection. It is good for me to be near God. Nothing's changed. His complaint, I suppose, would still be the same. His life is still difficult, and the wealthy and the wicked seem to be doing just fine. But for him, it's good to be near God. That's the answer. And, you know, you look in the life of Jesus, and Jesus, I mean, God was enough for him. And so he had no place to lay his head and, right, just relied on the hospitality of others and kind of, and that was enough. That was enough for him. So I think those, that's ultimately the bottom line out of this, right? There are other ways to answer the question around suffering, but it's a good one to ask in the context of financial generosity and how we go about preparing for when times are hard and the ways in which I think financial generosity can assist us in that. Now, there is the way of wisdom, as I mentioned. That wasn't the specific question, so I probably won't try to answer it here, lest this podcast go on and on and on. But there is something about the wisdom of how we give and to whom we give and the sorts of organizations and charities. You know, when Glenn talked a bit about finding out the why, you know, why we're giving to something or someone, and that's pretty helpful for us. I think we want to be good stewards of our finances, and we want to make sure that it's impactful and all of those sorts of things. And, you know, we're not, I don't think, you know, despite Jesus' words, which makes it complicated, to just give everything away and not have anything. There's a way of wisdom for us. But I think we need to counter the fear that we often experience, right? That you don't have enough and you won't have enough. And that's, I think one of the best things we can do to prepare our spirits and hearts for difficult times in other ways in our lives. So hope that helps. I felt like I was meandering at the end there. It happens fairly frequently on this podcast, but I hope that that's helpful nonetheless. And let's move into our third and final question. So essentially, the question is, where does tithing fit in with financial generosity? If you've been a part of Gaimia Baptist Church, you'll know that we don't talk a lot about tithing. Tithing is the principle that's found in the Old Testament that we should give 10% of our money. And that's kind of the standard call that we are given. And you'll actually find in many churches that that's, you know, kind of the standard that is presented for people, that we expect people to tithe and give 10% of their income to, you know, to the church, to charities, to mission, to whatever the case might be. I was raised on that. That was a pretty standard kind of line in lots of the churches that I was a part of. But over time, I've come to question that a little bit. And I'll tell you how I question it. I do believe that tithing is not a bad place to start. You know, I mentioned at the outset, for those who are, you know, teenagers or uni students or have an irregular income, I don't think it's a bad place to start, you know, to say, okay, when I get my pay slip, I'm going to, you know, take 10% and give it away. In part because 10% is really easy to calculate. That's, I always like that part about it, to be really frank and honest with you. But it also feels like a pretty reasonable, like it feels like a reasonable amount to give away, without necessarily crippling, you know, your own needs and requirements. Now, I would put a caveat on that before I get into the rest of it. And that is that I'm no longer convinced that that's the standard. And the reason for that is, well, there's a number of them, but a couple of them. One is that if we make it the standard, it can be crippling for us if we are in a really difficult time. Crippling in the sense of if we say, I'm going to give 10% away and we really don't have that much margin in our finances. It can cripple us in terms of just our lives, our ability to pay the bills and do all the things that we need to do. And alongside of that, then, if that becomes the standard, then we feel like we're being disobedient, unfaithful. We're not doing everything that we should be doing. And I'm pretty sure that Jesus has died to set us free from that kind of legalism. So there are times and places when, you know, when things are so tight that it might be that we're giving 1% away. We're giving 5% away. We're just giving something just to kind of, you know, to say, yes, we're giving, you know, for the principle, but we're not being flogged by some sort of standard. And I think it works the other way as well. If we give 10% and we end up in a position where that's not actually, it doesn't really touch our lifestyle at all, then we can feel like we are ticking the boxes of financial generosity when really we haven't allowed our hearts to be touched at all. Where 10% doesn't really matter to us. Like we give 10% away and it's like, I didn't even notice it. I think there may be times when Jesus is then calling us to a greater generosity. And I think ultimately that's the problem that I have with tithing. It's certainly found in scripture. There is some debate about how many tithes there were. Some scholars believe there might have been up to 3 tithes, leading into about 30% of your overall income, depending on how you read the tithing sections. There seems to have been other offerings that were kind of expected or encouraged on top of that in the Old Testament law. But Jesus doesn't talk about tithing. He talks about generosity. All right. He talks about not worrying about tomorrow and about what you're going to eat and what you're going to wear. Just, you know, he talks about giving and giving freely as we have received. And I believe that that is a much harder standard for us to meet, because it basically asks us to be continually asking, are we acting generously? Rather than just kind of going, oh, there's the 10% line. If I could just get up to that, then I will have fulfilled all righteousness. And once I've gotten there, then I don't have to worry about it anymore. That's not the generosity that I think we're called to as followers of Jesus. I think we are called to a transformative kind of generosity, a generosity that does, as I mentioned in the previous question, does declare God is enough for me. And is continually reassessing where we find ourselves in relationship to financial generosity, the opportunities that we have to give and to support and strengthen ministries and charities and help people and all those sorts of things. So I think tithing is a useful beginning. It's a useful line in the sand as long as it doesn't become our final standard. There are times when giving less than 10% it's all that we're capable of. You know, you hear the story of Paul is writing to the Corinthians and talks about the Macedonian Christians who gave above and beyond what they were able, right, because of the joy that was welling up within them. And he describes them as being in the midst of extreme poverty. For those who were in extreme poverty, like, I don't know that they gave 10% of their income or 10% of their whatever they had. Paul's not particularly interested in the percentages. He doesn't talk about the fact that they tithed out of their extreme poverty. He just says they gave out of their extreme poverty in line with the joy that they had in all that they had received in Christ. And that, I think, is ultimately the standard that we're called to, which is a lot harder to quantify. And I think that's part of the problem I have with the tithe. It quantifies it in a way that's quite helpful, but it can become quite legalistic. So one of the books I read, I can't remember the fellow's name now, the author's name, but it was called Beyond Tithing. And one of the things he noted is that, you know, there was an enormous amount of canon law or church law that was dealing with tithes, how to collect them. Now, it was obviously a very different time. The church was central to society, and the collection of tithes was legislated. But people kept trying to find loopholes and figure out ways to beat the system, as you can imagine. Part of his point was that seems to be the way we're built. We want to try to, you know, rig the system once we know that that's the line. And I think, you know, you find it in, I remember questions being asked when I was younger about tithing. You know, do you tithe off your gross income or off your net income? And that ultimately felt to me a little bit like the earliest form of a question that could be used to reduce our financial generosity, if you follow me. I'm not saying that everyone who asks that or asks that is trying to get out of it, but there can be a pretty big difference between your gross income and your net income, right? And if I decide that I can tithe off my net income, then I'm rigging the system a bit in terms of if I'm tithing, particularly, you know, 10% of. I think likewise, we can sometimes fall into a similar kind of pattern around tax deductibility. I realize that tax deductibility allows people to give more than they might normally have been able to give. But I think that question, as well as, you know, others, I think we just have to watch our hearts, you know, that we're asking, you know, Jesus, where do you want us to give and how do you want us to give? So I hope that's helpful, at least talking about tithing. If you're unfamiliar with the concept, I hope that gives you a little bit of framing for it. And, you know, if you are tithing, good on you. If you find that a real struggle and you feel either guilty because you're not able to tithe just because of the situation you find yourself in financially, I'd like to say you are free to give less than 10% and still call yourself a Christian, right? The issue is about allowing ourselves to be shaped by generosity, shaped by giving. I think there's something really powerful about giving something away. And if you have been tithing for a long time, I would challenge you to ask the question, has that really touched you? Has that changed you? Does it cross your mind at all anymore? Is Jesus perhaps calling you to greater generosity in one way, shape, or form? Those are great questions, though. I really appreciate those of you who contributed those. I look forward to continuing our series. We're going to be looking at service and serving others, kind of a sharpening focus on others this upcoming week. We're going to be looking at Philippians 2, 5 to 11, which I'm really looking forward to. It's one of my favorite passages in Scripture, and talking a bit more about that, and looking forward to being with you again next week for the Big Three. We'll see you then, and God bless.
Thanks for joining us at the GBC Big Three podcast. We trust you found this inspiring, encouraging, challenging, but ultimately helpful to enable you to follow Jesus. If you enjoyed this podcast, you can also listen to the We Are the Church podcast, a discussion pod with real stories from real people at Guymere Baptist as they share their experiences of faith and discipleship in action. If you've enjoyed this pod, why don't you rate and review it? This way others can discover the podcast too.